You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've told you in the past that we've got a really good show lined up today. But today, we've got a really freaking good show lined up for you today. Mark Lawrence is going to join us as he does every Wednesday. We're going to run the gauntlet with Mark. We're going to talk college football. Of course, we got Thanksgiving NFL football on tap, NBA basketball this evening. We're going to talk some boxing, man. We got a cool dude stepping up and joining us. Cordell Booker will throw it down. 3-0 as a professional, but dude's got a real interesting story, so much so that they've recently made a movie about his life story called The Boxer. We're going to break it down with The Boxer. And who else do we have on the show today? Oh, yeah. Iron Mike Ditka joins us on the show today. The one and only coach, Iron Mike Ditka. That's all you got to say, man. Ditka. Iron Mike Ditka joins us. We'll run the gauntlet with the coach as well. Get his takes on what's going on in the National Football League and who knows what else with the coach. It's been a couple of years since we've had Coach Ditka on the program, and we got a great Ditka story. It's me and the Raging Redhead Cam Stewart once went and played golf with my Ditka. I had Ditka on my show years ago. We hit it off. I'm buddies with Kyle Turley, who's close with Coach Ditka. We got the free invite to the golf tournament. All we had to do was go to Orlando. I had 48 hours notice to go. And basically, if Mike Ditka invites you to go play golf, you go play golf with Mike Ditka. It's as simple as that. So we got on a plane and we went to Orlando, Florida, and it was a freaking debacle, man. It was hot as hell outside, all right? It was hot as hell outside. Orlando, Florida, it was like the summertime. It was literally 120 degrees or something like that. It was too hot to play for the coach. So the coach shut the tournament down after a couple of holes, and we basically just got blasted, man. We got so drunk, it was crazy. And there was only 12 of us there. It was Ditka, me, Cam, and four dudes from Texas and a couple of dudes from Notre Dame. And that was about it. And we just got smashed at this resort in Orlando. And that's the night that both me and Cam were both detained by Orlando police at the same time in different places of the city. What are the odds? What are the odds? I got back to the hotel. He's like, what happened to you? I'm like, I got picked up by the cops. I'm like, what happened to you? He's like, I got picked up by the cops. Cam got detained, not arrested, but detained by Orlando police for walking through a drive-thru. He walked through a drive-thru. He tried to order at a Burger King. They freaked out. They called the cops. And, they wanted to arrest him. You're not allowed to walk through a drive-thru in Orlando, Florida. And I got detained for waiting outside of a sports bar, waiting for a taxi without any ID. That was my crime. I was publicly intoxicated without any ID. And the best part is, he's like, where are you staying? And I tell the cop, I'm like, I'm staying at Mike Ditka Resorts. He's like, Mike Ditka Resorts, all right, yeah. He's like, I never heard of Mike Ditka Resorts. I've been a cop here for 18 years. I'm like, I'm telling you, I'm staying with Mike Ditka. Of course, the guy doesn't believe me. I'm a drunk guy in a parking lot outside of a strip mall in Orlando, right? So long story short, he had to end up, the cop started drilling me on football. He's like, so you must know football if you know Ditka. And I started answering football. He took the cuffs off. He's like, yeah, your story seems to check out. And he actually drove me back to the hotel. That's our Mike Ditka story. We're not going to get to all of that with Coach Ditka, but we'll bring up a little bit with him. Crazy times with Ditka, so it's going to be great to have Coach Ditka back on the show. So it's a Thanksgiving weekend. It's also rivalry weekend, and it's amazing, isn't it? It seems like just yesterday, man, that the college football and the NFL season kicked off. Remember Texas beating Notre Dame? Holy crap, man, now they want to run Charlie Strong out of town. It seems like just yesterday they were celebrating. Texas back, man. Huge win. I guess it was a sign of things to come for Brian Kelly and another name, Fighting Irish. But it really is amazing to me that it is already rivalry week. The college football season is coming to a close. There's another week coming up. We got championship week and all that. But the season essentially is on the line this weekend. And, it's way cool, man. We got some awesome freaking games this weekend. But at the end of the football season, and every Super Bowl as well, I always get depressed, man, because I realize, I'm like, man, 2016 college football season is done, which means that my life is 1 year closer to being done as well. Like, that's the deal. With every Super Bowl that passes, we're all one step closer to death, all right? I don't want to get too negative here, but I got to tell you, man, when I've been on these crazy benders in Vegas and stuff during a Super Bowl, and then I realize, I'm like, how many more Super Bowls am I really going to see? I won't be alive for Super Bowl 100. Will I be around for Super Bowl 75? Then I start getting depressed in the middle of the Super Bowl thinking, man, I'm going to die soon, and man, this might be the last Super Bowl I ever see. You know, life goes by fast, just like football seasons. And I've also often said, life itself is like a football game. I'm 46 right now. I'm like midway through the third quarter, man, and I'm trailing by like 21 points, all right? I've got to go into a no-huddle offense and start picking up the freaking pace if I'm going to come back and win the game of life. But sometimes you got to take a step back. Life's going to give you good and it's going to give you bad. This weekend is as good as it gets. Rivalry weekend. We've got the Iron Bowl, man. It's fitting that we got Iron Mike Dick on the show today because we got the Iron Bowl. Alabama and Auburn. Everybody's penciled in the Alabama Crimson Tide into the national championship game. And rightfully so. These guys are dominant. Auburn's probably not going to beat them, but they could. And the stakes are ultra high once again in an Iron Bowl. And it always hasn't been that way. Who would have imagined that the Penn State Nittany freaking Lions of all teams would be playing for a shot to go to the Big Ten championship game? And then subsequently, potentially, the Final Four. That's right. Penn State could be in the playoffs, as crazy as it sounds, if they beat Michigan State, which they might not. But if they beat Michigan State and Ohio State beats Michigan, Penn State are going to the Big Ten championship game. They win the Big Ten championship. They will be in the playoff. We will have two teams then in the playoff for the Big Ten if Ohio State wins the Apple Cup. The Apple Cup's always just been a little cute throw-in to the rivalries. Oh, yeah, yeah, and a little Apple Cup that they play for out there in the Pacific Northwest. Well, not so fast, my friend, as Lee Corso would say. This year, the Apple Cup sees the fifth-ranked Washington Huskies go into Pullman. The 23rd-ranked Washington State Cougars. The Cougars are a live and dangerous dog in this football game. It's going to be freaking epic, and we haven't even gotten to what they call the game, which is known as the greatest college football rivalry in the history of the game. And there is only one, the game. And I've been around a long time, man, and I've seen multiple games of the century and all that other type of crap. But I'll tell you what, man, it doesn't get any freaking bigger than number 2 Ohio State and number 3 Michigan playing for a spot in potentially the Big Ten championship game. And if Ohio State wins and Penn State wins and Ohio State doesn't go to the Big Ten championship game, you're crazy, man. You still think Hillary Clinton's going to come back and win the election if you don't think Ohio State is going to be in the playoffs if they finish with one loss, whether they go to the Big Ten championship game or not. We've got Urban Meyer, man. We've got John Harbaugh. I've watched every Michigan and Ohio State game since like 1978, man. All right? Like, you know, die freaking hard, man. Over the years, I've lived in the outhouse. I've lived in the penthouse, man. I've lived on the streets, and I've had games in which I've had $18,000 to $25,000 rolling. And there's always been one common theme over the years. And somebody once told me, they said, Morenci, wherever you are in the world, and I don't know, and we haven't spoken in 10 years, I always think of you. I know on Saturday when Michigan are playing Ohio State, you're sitting down watching that game. And you know what? The more things change, the more they stay the same, because I will be sitting down and watching this game with the rest of you. It doesn't get any better than this. As crappy as the world is that we live in, this week kicks ass. The NFL, man, we got first place on the line with the Lions and the Vikings. We got the Cowboys and the Redskins on Thanksgiving. All that and freaking more. Let's do this thing. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we've got an awesome freaking show today, man. We got Mark Lawrence. We've got Cordell Booker. There's a new movie called The Boxer about his life story. And, oh, yeah, we've got the one and only Iron Mike Ditka on the show today. Coach Ditka will join us. So let's get right down to business with Mark Lawrence. Happy Thanksgiving, Mark. It's always a pleasure. How you doing?
It's my pleasure, Gabe. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. And do me a favor, when the Iron Mike comes on the show, pass my congratulations along to him. I was with him in a Bodog conference in Las Vegas, and I really put him on a spot. I mean, I thought he was going to come off the stage and hammer me. I had asked him, he had taken questions from people in the audience, and I had asked him, what was his thinking behind trading every draft pick he had for Ricky Williams? Could you justify that, please?
What was his answer?
He didn't like it.
I told a story earlier. Me and Cam went down to his tournament, golf tournament in Orlando. It was too hot to play. There wasn't that many people there, and we ended up just getting drunk with Dick all day, and I interviewed him, and we were both kind of, we both had a few. And, you know what I asked him, right? I was sitting right face-to-face with him. I said, how come you gave the ball to the fridge instead of Walter Payton in the Super Bowl? He didn't get a touchdown. Oh, man. He stopped for a second. He looked at me, and he's like, man, you ain't screwing around, are you? And I was, he goes, I thought we were having fun here, Gabe. The best part is, he goes, I didn't think about it. He goes, there was nothing malicious behind it. I just didn't realize Walter didn't have a touchdown.
That's truthful, on his part anyway. But, after I had asked him that question, at night they were rolling cigars and he was sitting in a booth like in a harem with all these good-looking babes around him. And I went up to him and went to shake his hand. I thought he was going to burn the cigar right on my forehead,
We'll get to the games, but Kyle Turley, who's introduced me to Dick, Kyle's my buddy, and Kyle played for Dick in New Orleans. And they were so bad. Remember, Mark, they were terrible, right? They were like 0-12 or whatever at one point. Kyle told me a story about how the Saints players all kneeled down before the game. They were like 0-12. The Saints players all kneeled down before the game and they said a prayer. And then Ditka came in at the end of the prayer and then he said, and please, Jesus, would you teach these dumb son of a bitches how to play the sport of football so we can win a goddamn game? And the whole room burst out laughing and they won. It was like people thinking Ditka is a hard ass, but he's actually a really funny guy, right? Like
he's a down earth guy. He's a motivational speaker too, as well. Yeah. So I'm sure that was planned. Exactly what he said.
He knew. So let's jump in here. We got a connection to Dick, and I look forward to asking him about Coach Harbaugh because the coach, of course, Harbaugh was one of his quarterbacks with the Chicago Bears. But I said it off the top, Mark. You've been around a long time. You've been following this stuff even longer than I have. But I've been watching college football religiously since the late '70s, and I can't recall a bigger rivalry weekend across the board. I really can't. Alabama's the number one team. They're playing for something massive still. This Ohio State-Michigan game is the biggest Ohio State-Michigan game of my lifetime, basically. The Apple Cup is normally just a cute throw-in. That's a monster national championship implication football game. This is the most impactful rivalry weekend in recent memory, man.
It sure is, especially like you say with the Ohio State-Michigan game and so much meaning to the other rivalry games. We had almost gotten out of what rivalry meant in the past, but all of a sudden it comes together here, and it's going to be a heck of a weekend this week, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So it's too bad that Michigan lost their cornerback, and John O'Korn is in. O'Korn was, he struggled throwing the football. 7 completions, 59 yards, 7 for 16. We'll cut him a little slack. There was a blizzard, there was a snowstorm, there was a lot of wind. He struggled. He's from Florida, this kid. The weather's not going to be too bad in Columbus this week. I like that aspect. But he came alive with that big scramble, Mark. And you can tell the confidence grew as the game went on. They're not in the same situation they were a couple of weeks ago, Michigan. But John O'Korn was the American Athletic Offensive Player of the Year. I mean, like, or freshman of the year, whatever it was. The kid was good at Houston. He was a champion in Florida at the high school level. The kid's a stud. He's got to find a way to play better than he did last week if Michigan's going to win this game, though. He has to make some plays. You can't just manage this game. You got to win this game.
This is almost deja vu of last year, Gabe, when Michigan State went into Ohio State and Connor Cook was out. They had to start Tyler O'Connor at quarterback, a backup quarterback. And what did he do? He pulled the rug right out on the Buckeyes. O'Corn, John O'Corn, was a quarterback at St. Thomas Aquinas down here in Fort Lauderdale. You know, they're on a par with Bishop Gorman. They're that good, and he was that good. But I'm also hearing word that Wilton Spite is practicing this week for Michigan, so there's a chance that he may be behind center as well. I think regardless, I look at John Harbaugh in this football game. He was hired at Michigan for one reason, and that was to beat Ohio State. They had taken three losses in a row when he came there. They were embarrassed last year. That was their worst home loss in a conference game in 67 years last year when Ohio State went up to the Big House and knocked them down. I look for a big effort by Michigan here, the number one ranked defense, and I also like the fact that if Michigan wins this game, they're in the Big Ten title game. If Ohio State wins, they're on the outside hoping that the football the committee keeps them alive for the playoffs.
I think they will. I think they will if it comes to that, but there's a perception that Ohio State is so much more powerful than Michigan. Yeah, Michigan scored 42.3 points per game. They give up only 10.9. Ohio State scores 43.8. They give up 13. We're talking about completely equal teams, yet Ohio State's having a problem throwing the football. That's been one of their weaknesses this year. They like to run the football, and they're good at it, but Michigan's very good at stopping the run. Some of your numbers from the database, Harbaugh, 10-1 straight up and 9-2 against the spread off a non-covering win. Ohio State just 2-6 ATS last eight times playing a team with revenge. This is a monster revenge, but this game comes down to the wire, in my opinion, man. Six and a half feels too high.
Looks kind of rich to me for a game of this importance, Gabe. One other stat inside my Midweek Alert statistical newsletter, these two teams have played six common opponents this year. In those six games, Ohio State goes 5-1 straight up, loses the spread four times. Michigan goes 6-0 straight up, loses the spread three times. But in the stats, Michigan wins them 228 yards a game. Ohio State wins them 184. I think the edge is to Michigan here. I think the revenge is a big factor. With the number one defense in the country, I'll be taking the points.
The game, man, it doesn't get any bigger than this. All right, so it looks like we got a Michigan theme here. The state of Michigan shines. Let's stick in the state. Friday, Thanksgiving, holiday edition, Toledo and Western Michigan. The Broncos looking for perfection. They're 9-point favorites. The total is 69. Western Michigan are 11-0. They're 8-3 against the spread. The Toledo Rockets are 9-2 straight up. They're 7-4 against the spread. And oh yeah, Toledo plays a tougher schedule, and they have over the last couple of years. This is a Toledo Rocket team that went into Little Rock and beat our Fayetteville and beat Arkansas. They beat Arkansas State this year on the road. Near miss in Provo against BYU earlier this year. Western Michigan are sexier right now. I'm not really sure how much better they are than the Toledo, though, in all reality.
I think on paper, this game looks like a pick'em to me. I know there's a lot of support to Western Michigan to go undefeated, but with that comes the noose. The noose gets tighter and tighter for these undefeated football teams. They didn't cover the spread last week in a big number that they had to lay against Buffalo, and you have to like the fact that the dog in the series has covered 9 of the last 10 matchups in the series here. I think this is a really well-experienced, been-there-done-it-before Toledo-type football team that's going to take this game right down to the wire.
Man, the Toledo Rockets are just monsters during these weekday games, too. 7-0-1 according to the playbook.com newsletter. You can get it on your mobile device. It's a must-read if you're a serious player. Rockets score 39.2 points per game. They're giving up 22. Broncos, 43 points per game, giving up 17. Seems pretty evenly matched to me, as you just mentioned, too. The fact that 9-1, the underdog is 9-1 in this series. Looks like the dog is the way to go. Mark, we don't want to keep Coach Dick waiting, so we've only got a couple of minutes. Michigan State and Penn State. Penn State win. They're going to the Big Ten championship game if Ohio State wins as well, because Penn State lost to Michigan. Yet, with this comes a lot of pressure, man. Michigan State might be the best 3-8 college football team ever, Mark. Like, seriously? D'Antonio getting double-digit points here? Got to be the underdog, man.
Unbelievable, the number in this football game. How about this stat here? Mark D'Antonio, 17-1-1 to the spread in his last 19 times as a dog when he's taking on a team that won and covered their previous game. The pressure's squarely all on Penn State in this game. And let me ask you this, Gabe. What do you think? Do you think the committee wants Penn State, with all this Joe Paterno garbage going, circling around, playing in a college football playoff game, or do they want Michigan or Ohio State?
That's a good point. Well, when it comes to that my money will be on Wisconsin, because yeah, Badger will be getting the call. You're right, man. They don't want and the program's rebuilt. No, they're gonna want to. They already want to put the statue back already. Like, no. That's I think, you know what? If I'm looking at a money line shot here, Michigan State could win this game outright. They might upset them.
I'm with you. I call that 100% in the newsletter. We have them winning the game by 3, and I wouldn't be surprised with you. I'm on the money line with the Spartans.
Marco Lawrence's playbook, as I stated, it's the best newsletter in the business, and it has been for a long time. Check it out, playbook.com, available on your mobile device as well, iPads and iPhones and Androids and all that type of stuff. So go to the Google Store and check that out. Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Hey, Gabe, enjoy the games. Happy Thanksgiving. Be good, and I'll catch you next week.
Marco Lawrence with us. We take a quick break. The one and only Iron Mike Ditka joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. It is our honor. I'm really excited to welcome a man like, obviously, we don't need to go through his accomplishments, but he's been there and he's done that. His name is Iron Mike Ditka, and we're very excited to have him on the Fantasy Sports Network. Coach, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure.
Well, you know what, Coach? I told a story off the beginning of the program, the opportunity I got to meet you. It was at Mike Ditka's Resorts in Orlando, Florida, and I'm close with Kyle Turley. You came on my radio show years ago. I got an invite down to the golf tournament, but, Coach, I don't know if you remember, it was too hot to play, so we did more drinking than golfing that day. We sat poolside at the resort, and you just told some great stories. It was a great time. It's something I'll never forget in my lifetime.
Well, thank you. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It was a little, man, it was hot as hell that day. I had a hard time finding that golf course, man, in Orlando. But let's jump in right now, Coach. Talk about a couple of your former teams, one of them being the Dallas Cowboys. Did you buy into the Dallas Cowboys? At what point did you say, you know what, this Dallas Cowboy team is for real?
I think, first of all, the Cowboys have a great organization in the way they draft. And all you have to do is look at the quarterback and the running back. These two young men are outstanding athletes, and they brought them into the system. The Cowboys have a great offensive line. They got a great tight end, and Jason Witten, one of the best guys ever played the game. They got good outside receivers because they can get open. Now, you know, the question with them has been their defense, but their defense is playing better. But the offensive line is probably as good as any offensive line in football. So it wasn't a matter of buying in. I think this is, I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl, but this right now is one of the best teams I've seen this year. They're doing all the things they have to do on both sides of the ball. They match up well on special teams. So, I mean, you can't ask much more than what they're doing. You know, I'm sure a lot of people didn't think they'd be. I have one loss at this point in the year, but that's where it is. And, you know, for somebody to beat them, they better bring a lunch bucket. It's going to be an all-day job.
Tony Romo has been a class act in how he's handled the situation, Coach. But clearly, moving forward in the future, you know, he can't be a $14 million a year backup with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't like playing the speculation game, but Jay Cutler is injured, out for the year right now. Never really fit in to the Chicago mold of what they want for a quarterback. It seems to me that Tony Romo would be a perfect fit for the Chicago Bears and the system that Coach Fox wants to run. What do you think about Romo's future, and what do you think about the Chicago Bears quarterback future?
Well, I really don't know about Tony. Tony's a class act, first of all. He handled this thing with real class. I mean, it's not going to change. You know, you can't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, they're not going to change, go back to Tony, unless there's an injury. That's just fact. So, you know, you're saying, is he available? I don't know if he is or not. I I think that the Cowboys rolled the dice with Jay, and I mean the Bears rolled the dice with Jay, and it just. But you know, it's not all Jay's fault. I mean, there's a lot of pieces missing in the puzzle. So you know, you look at it. You know, they got some good receivers at times. They run the ball well, but they're not a great offensive line. They're not a great defense by any means. And so you know, you get in a situation where you're playing catch up all the time. You have to throw the ball a lot more, and I think that was a part of the problem. So I mean, you know, to sit here and say that the Bears' problems are all because of Jay Cutler, I think is foolish. I think they got to look at the whole picture and where they drafted, how they drafted, what they got, and they got to make an evaluation. They got to really look at themselves, all of them, because there's some things they did that didn't work out. That's all.
Yeah, you know, and Jay Cutler has been the scapegoat. The media likes to focus in on him, but there are a lot of other guys that have to look in the mirror, aren't there?
Well, I think so. I don't think I think it'd be foolish just to blame this on Jay Cutler. It would be that would be a travesty, in my opinion, because I mean I like Jay. I mean I think Jay. Sometimes I wish to be a little more outgoing, be a little bit more upfront as a leader. But you're talking about a guy that has a lot of talent. Now, if you can never find a way to harness that talent and put it in the right situation, you should have a pretty good football player. Now, I know he's been in Denver. He's been in Chicago. It hasn't worked out. So I don't know. I'm just saying that the Bears have other problems besides Jay Cutler, believe me.
I want to talk about another Chicago Bear quarterback, a quarterback that you coached. And I have a memory, Coach, of just you letting him have it on the sidelines. And I'm talking about John Harbaugh right now. You know, somebody that grew up in a football family with his father being a coach and then being groomed by you as well. And he gives you influence. He gives his family influence as well. What can you tell us about Coach Harbaugh, and did you see a future coach in him when he was a player?
I never noticed that for one reason. I only noticed him as a player. Probably the most competitive guy I've ever been around. If you told him he couldn't do it, he would do it. I mean, he thought he could do it. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not so good. But I'm just telling you that he is a competitor. He's a fighter. He'll go down to the wire with you. I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is. I believe me, I knew he was going to have success as a coach. Because what you see is what you get. I mean, he didn't sugarcoat it now. So he is what he is, and he's a very straightforward guy, but he's driven. He's motivated. And his motivation is to be the best. And there's nothing the matter with it. I mean, that's what makes greatness in our country and our world. When people decide they want to be the best at what they do, you know, they pay a price and they go get it. And right now, that's what Coach Harbaugh is doing.
Does it make you proud when you see your former players have success? You've had so many former players had success as head coaches at the collegiate and the professional level. Does it bring you pride, Coach?
It really does. I mean, I'm really happy for them. It really got nothing to do with me. I mean, Jeff Fisk is a great player for me, a great tough guy, outstanding coach. So was Singletary, Les Frazier. A lot of guys went into the coaching profession. Some of them had more success than others. But Jim Harbaugh is pretty special. In the sense, you know, he had a lot of success at Stanford, and then he came back to his alma mater. And that's really, to me, it's pretty classy. He's a Michigan man through and through, and he wants a national championship there. And I wouldn't put it past him because they're going to be there at the end of the year.
Coach, you dealt with a wide variety of quarterbacks, right? A football guy, a Mike Tomczak type, who very workmanlike type of quarterback, and then a wild man like Jim McMahon. Did Jim used to drive you crazy, or did you go to bed in a hotel sometimes thinking, oh, dear God, I hope Jim's not getting in trouble right now? What was it like coaching Jim McMahon?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jim McMahon is you'd love to coach him because what he had, he gave you. You know, sometimes he didn't always agree with his decisions on the field. But usually when I asked him, I said, what the hell did you audible for? The reason he gave me pretty good. You know, he studied film. He understood what the defenses were doing. And sometimes he tried to get out of a situation into a better situation. Now, I have nothing but the greatest respect for Jim McMahon. We would have never won a Super Bowl without McMahon. I don't care how good our defense was. We would have never won a Super Bowl without McMahon, period.
Strong words from Coach Iron Mike Dick. Coach, I wanted to get your take. 12 missed extra points last week. We're arriving at the time of the year right now. Weather last week had an effect for the first time, but man, there were extra points getting blocked in domes and stuff like that too last week. What do you like the rule that they moved the extra point back?
Well, evidently it's a good rule because they can't make it from there. You got to look at it. The other thing was a gimme. It was a tip shot. It was nothing. I mean, nothing. Some of them were missed over the years, yes. Some were blocked. But you know, putting it back there, you're talking about a 30-yard field goal. And that there's a chance to block it. There's a chance that the kicker's going to, and I hate to say it, would choke. He's going to pull the ball, push the ball. So, I mean, last week was incredible to watch. I mean, it was amazing, 12 of them. But, and again, some of them were blocked because it was a good design by the defense to get in there and block it. But well, just missing them, I tell you, if the weather gets bad and the wind starts blowing, it's going to get worse and worse because if you took the average out of what all the 30-yard field goals were out throughout bad weather, you'd find out there were a lot of missed.
I believe they're down to 93% now. So kickers have made 93% of the time. What do you think of like when Coach Tomlin goes for two all the time? Would you be aggressive like this? I mean, you're coaching in Soldier Field, Coach. It's pretty windy there. You have Walter Payton, man. You got the fridge. Are you kicking the extra point or are you going for two?
Coach Tomlin, I mean, I know what he's doing. First of all, if he makes it, he changes the whole thing. You got to go for it if you score, basically. Well, you're not going to win the game. I mean, that's just what he's doing. He's putting you behind the eight ball. And it shows that he has a lot of confidence in his offense. He's got nothing to do with his kicker. He's playing a game that he figures, well, I got six, I can get eight.
Yeah.
If I can get eight, you get seven, I'm still ahead of you. And that's what he's doing right now. Do I agree with it? I think there's a time you kick it. I think there's a time you go for two. But, I mean, I have no qualm with what he's doing right now. I think it's kind of impressive because I know he's going to put the other team behind the eight ball if he gets that two-point conversion.
Coach, the first time you were on my show was in connection with the Gridiron Greats. And I can't think of anyone of your stature besides alongside Coach Shula, who has been so vocal and active and worked. A lot of times coaches sort of separate themselves from the players' issues. And I often like get frustrated because I think, you know, you as a coach, you made a lot of money off these guys knocking their heads out there on the field, but now you're not there for them right now. You've made a point of being there for guys, as well as Coach Shula has. Have things gotten better over the last couple of years with how the National Football League is handling this? And something that Kyle Turley told me, he said, you know, Gabe, one of the biggest battles isn't just with the NFL, it's also with the NFLPA and getting their, you know, getting our own guys to buy in that we're going to be in trouble in the future. We got to protect each other and have each other's backs.
Well, he hit right on the button. Powell hit right on the button. The problem is not the NFL. The NFLPA is a problem. They have to understand that you know, everybody that plays this game is at risk. There are some people who are fortunate enough to get through the game with minimal injuries. There are some who have injuries that really create problems for them in life. And all we're trying to do with the Gridiron Race is help some of those people. That's all. It's not to try to take power away from anybody or make anybody look bad. It's to help people. And that's what we decided to do. I think the league has come through in a little bit. They're putting some money into these to try to help these former players. A lot of these guys just, you know, they don't have anything. And they got and part of the reason, some of them have squandered what they had. I understand that. But still, a lot of what their problems have come from health problems. And all we're trying to do is we're not the answer. We're kind of a buffer zone for them, but we can help them out a little bit so they can maybe get some significant help, because that's all we can do. We have to go out and raise the money.
Well, we encourage people to check it out, gridirongreats.com. They have charity events, golf tournaments, signed memorabilia from all kinds of Hall of Fame legends, such as Coach Ditka, Coach Shula, countless other players as well. You do great work, Coach, and you've always been one of my favorites, and you always will be. It's always a pleasure catching up with you, Coach. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Thank you, guys. Take care. God bless you.
God bless you. God bless Mike Ditka for sure. His retirement speech was the best. Regrets? Maybe a few. You can't beat Mike Ditka, man. Great stuff. We wish the cell phone connection was a little bit better, but you get Ditka on the phone, you take the call. Game Time Decisions continues. All right, we told you off the start of the show that we got a smoking, kick-ass program rocking today on the Fantasy Sports Network, and we didn't disappoint. Mark Lawrence, the legend, Iron Mike Ditka, and we wrap it up with a dude who's making waves right now and getting a lot of headlines as the documentary The Boxer debuted at the documentary New York City Film Festival, the New York Short Film Festival, and the Big Apple Short Film Festival, where it won the award for a best short documentary. We're talking about the life story of Cordell Booker. Let's take a look at the trailer here for the movie The Boxer.
When I first started selling drugs, I was either 13 or 14. I was making a good amount of money in middle school. Once I got into high school, that's when I became really good. It was easy at that point. Everybody was doing drugs. I didn't know what I was gonna do. And now, I wake up every day with a purpose.
Powerful trailer that I want to watch. I want to watch the whole film. And man, I laughed right away, man. A couple of seconds into the trailer, when I heard Cordell say, "Man, high school then it was easy. Everybody was doing drugs." Cordell Booker now joins us. A 3-0 Cordell Booker joins us. Cordell, welcome to the show, man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. How you doing, man?
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Hey, we're doing good. We're doing good. So let's get right down to business, man, and talk about your story and where you're at right now. It looks like a fascinating story of your life story growing up, in Brooklyn. You're getting by, you're hustling, you're doing what you can do, and you decide to turn your life around. And I have a similar story in a sense, Cordell. I grew up in Montreal in a neighborhood in which, man, you either did coke or sold coke or robbed houses or bought the stolen gear. It was the way that it was, man. And, I was thinking about the other day, when I was 15, 16 years old, man, I made $85,000. I went to vacation alone as a 16-year-old to Amsterdam, dude. All right? And, I've been on TV the last 15 years. I might have made that much money, in 2 or 3 years over the years. And I think, man, I'm broke now, man. But, sometimes, you got to sacrifice something to do the right thing. And I made a decision, sort of, the typical thing, man. So many people go to jail, man. Guns to my head and all that type of stuff. And I realized, man, this ain't gonna end well for me. I gotta do something else, man. So I got into music, then I got into this. That's why I'm so touched by your story. Is that a similar situation for you?
Absolutely. You touched on pretty much everything that I've been through, that coming out of, being in a predicament where you don't know if you're going to be in jail, out of jail for, you know, 13 to 16 years, you just appreciate life totally different after that.
What was the turning point for you? Was there an incident? You know, I lived in Hollywood, man. I had an incident, you know, doors kicked in, shotguns in the whole nine yards, man. Was there an incident that you said, damn, man, I got to change because this is going in a bad direction right now?
Yeah, there was actually a couple of times where I had run-ins with other guys, you know, guns pointed at my face, being shot at, things like that, where, you know, I was afraid, but I wanted the money more than I was afraid. And it wasn't until the judge told me that I could be locked up for, you know, 15, 13, yeah, 16 years, where I decided, you know, that was more scary than anything. Not being able to see my family, you know, realizing that I could be dead also. And, you know, that's more disappointing to me, you know, that I was doing those things and I didn't think about my family. I was being selfish, only worried about myself for material things at that.
Did boxing find you, or did you find boxing? Like, were you a fighter the whole time, like growing up as a kid? And you're like, damn, man, Cordell's got some skills. Or is it something that you said, I gotta find something new to channel this and use my athletic abilities? When did you start boxing? Was it a lifelong thing, or did it start later in life?
Well, I found boxing, I would say. Boxing wasn't a natural thing for me, but fighting was a natural thing for me. I always grew up fighting. I was fighting since I was a kid. When I was young, I lived in Bridgeport, and the first fight I got into when I was like six years old, a guy tried to steal my bike. And from there, I've always just been fighting for everything. Once that happened to me, that just struck a nerve with me. And I said to myself, anybody try to take anything from me or do anything to me, I'm going to fight about it. And now I've learned how to channel my anger through boxing.
Why boxing? Did you choose boxing? Are you into the UFC at all? MMA is so big right now. We just saw Conor McGregor fill up Madison Square Garden and a ton of money coming in. You know, did you ever think about mixed martial arts, and why boxing as opposed to MMA?
That's funny. When I first started, when I was in high school, they had a kickboxing gym, and I went there and I tried it out, and I was good with my hands, but the feet thing was a little tough for me. I wasn't a good kicker, and I didn't like being kicked, but we didn't have any boxing gym, so I just left the kickboxing gym. I was in probably 11th grade. I watched the MMA and the UFC, but I could never do that. I mean, that takes another level. Kick, grab, elbow, that's another level.
And the kicking and the elbow. You're like B-Hop, man, Bernard Hopkins. He's like, no, man, I ain't rolling around with a dude on the ground, man. Like, that's not what I do. I box, man.
Yeah. That's a little too... I mean, it's a totally different sport, in my opinion. It's a totally different sport. It's like if a basketball player tried to go play football.
Yeah, they keep talking about Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather right now. I personally don't think it's fair. I agree with Kyle with Floyd when he said, man, listen, Conor McGregor lost two fights ago to Nate Diaz. Mayweather's 49-0, man. You know, McGregor's been good for 6 months or a year. He's the hustle, he's the hype, but he's done a good job talking his way into even like, I should fight Mayweather. I get Mayweather going, dude, man, like, come on, man. Like, it's not the same thing, but as you stated, it's different sports. If they box only, Mayweather kills them. If they get an MMA cage, Conor's going to kick him in the head, and it won't end well for Floyd. That's right. The way it goes, right?
Exactly.
So who, what kind of boxer are you, man? I know you've knocked, you like to knock dudes out, but who are your influences? Who are you training with? You know, when people say, who do you like, man? Who is an influence? What fighting style do you model yourself after? What can you tell us?
I'm really big on, honestly, when I first started boxing, I was really big on Floyd Mayweather. I love the way he controls the ring. You know, I love him as a inside the ring. You know, the things he does outside the ring, I mean, he sells the fight. But I love the way he controls the ring. Muhammad Ali, I love him. You know, I love what he's done outside of the ring, inside the ring. He's done things that other fighters will probably never be able to do again. Also, Pernell Whitaker. That's actually my favorite fighter.
Yeah.
I love the way that he just defense is just
sweet pea.
So, yeah, that's the best defense I've ever seen.
You're a pugilist then. You're not a brawler, man, because all the guys you just named are smart, smart defensive fighters, yeah. Right? Like, you don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, like Arturo Gatti, man, God bless him, may he rest in peace. You know, he made a living getting punched in the face, man. Like, right. He's like, no, that's what I do. I'm going to get into the brawl. But, you know, half of fighting is not getting hit, right? People seem to forget exactly. That, man.
Exactly. The best boxers are the ones who have defense. I mean, there are, you know, top fighters who are offensive fighters, like Hands of Stone, Chavez, Arturo Gatti, but they don't have long careers. You know, well, not a lot of guys. Those guys have long careers, but not. You don't hear about any other guys who made big careers off of getting hit, you know, and knocking guys out. So I try to just stick to my game plan and move my head and be really defensive in the ring, but also land a lot of shots because I want to be exciting for the fans.
Well, man, we only got a minute or so left here, Cordell. But I really want to check out the full mini documentary here, the short film, The Boxer. So on the way out here, how did this come to be? How did you meet the producers of this? How did they find out about your life story? How did this movie come to be, man?
Well, I met the director about, I want to say, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He was actually training at the gym. We developed a relationship over the years. He actually asked me to do a commercial for him, the jump rope, which was maybe about 3 years ago. And he actually landed a commercial with Michael Vick from that. Then he came in last year to do a commercial for us. He came to talk to me. We sat down to shoot the commercial, and he said, there's more to your story. I need to get more. And then he just kept on from there, and it developed into this short film. And he's just really proud of it, and he loves the story, and he just wants it to be shared. He actually doesn't care about, you know, the accolades of winning. He just wants people to hear my message for the youth.
Well, it's a great, great story. We encourage people to check it out, man. And, you know, like, even people, I was talking to a dude the other day, man. He's been a lifelong hustler and stuff, and he's not doing it anymore. He's laying low. And he was like, man, I'd love to get into, like, sports, man, and maybe sports writing, but I can't do this. I've been this for the last, you know, 22 years. I told him, man, you already did it by cutting off one thing. Now you just take that next step, man. I think you can be a positive influence, just like Jerome Bettis was. You know, we can't all pretend that everyone was delivering newspapers as a kid, right, man? People have real life stories, man. Your real life story.
And that's the thing. Everybody has a story. You know, the thing about me, I don't want people to think like I'm trying to say my mind was harder or mine was more to come over. Everybody has their story and their battles that they have to get over. You know, I'm just using mine to connect to the youth. I know that that's my avenue, and that's what I want to do. I feel like that's what I was placed on Earth for, to help our troubled youth.
All right, check out The Boxer. We got to get out of here. There's Cordell Booker with us. Great stuff, Cordell. Thanks for the time, man.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
There's Cordell Booker with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our plays of the day. All right, we've got to be really quick on the way out here. The Toronto Raptors, been a rough road trip for them. They're going to win the game outright. Let's take the 4.5. Let's take them on the money line as well. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to go over 216.5. I'm not a fan of taking the Sacramento Kings, but Oklahoma City are in a bad spot. The Lakers, they're going to get killed tonight. Lions beat the Vikings, and it goes over.